So now we will read about how a wise person who has this right knowledge and the right intellect, what happens? See, we always want to know that we are result oriented. You know, what is in it for me? Why should I practice this karma yoga? What is the benefit? And here, throughout the Bhagavad Gita, first the Lord will give us the problem. Then he will give us the solution. This is what you should do. And then he will give us both choices. If you do this, this will happen. If you don't do this, this will happen. And the freedom is given throughout the Bhagavad Gita. Nowhere the instructions are, thou shalt do it or thou shalt suffer in hell. Nowhere it is said that. Bhagavan says, this is the choice. You can do this, this will happen. You don't do this, this will happen. The choice is yours. So here he is telling us what is the benefit of Karma Yoga. That is the last verse in this particular chapter. Then of course chapter 3, when we come to the whole chapter is on Karma Yoga, how I should work in the world. But here chapter 2 is just a brief introduction to Karma Yoga, to all the entire Bhagavad Gita. So the 51st verse is what's called as Phala Shruti. So what is the benefit of doing it? Why should I do it? So that is explained very beautifully. Verse number 51, chapter 2. Karma jam buddhi yukta hi. Phalam tyaktva manishinah. Janma bandha vinirmuktaha. Padam gacchantya namayam. So buddhi yukta, again he in the second word of the first line, he, when he's, Bhagavan says he, that means indeed, it is very certain. So when he wants to emphasize something, he said this is it, then he puts the word he. He means indeed, certainly. Buddhi yukta, so one who is endowed with intellect, who uses his or her intellect, karma jam phalam tyaktva. So he or she gives up the fruit born out of karma. So the fruit means the result out of karma he gives up. So you mean say the person works without fruit? Yes. And such a person is called manishi. Manishi can be explained as mana and isha. Mana means the mind, isha means the Lord. So this person is the Lord of the mind. So the mind is under his control. Mind is a instrument which the person uses to function in the world. But the mind doesn't take over. And what we find is, oh, my mind is so stressed. I am so agitated. And we sit for meditation and our mind is running 100 miles an hour. And then somebody says something, I get so stressed, I get so depressed, I am so worried, oh, what will happen? Unnecessarily, we just get stressed, we get worried. So the mind becomes our master. And that's why we say, oh, I can't handle this. And so what do? Take drugs, go to a doctor and say, give him Valium. Or we take up drinking or other illegal drugs. Or why? Because I'm too stressed out. I can't sleep. I can't function. I need, So this person is manishi. Isha means he's the Lord. Ishwara. Isha is the Lord of his mind. Manishi. Karmajam buddhi yuktahi. So one who has endowed with wisdom, who has the right wisdom, he gives up phalam tyaktva. He gives up all the fruit out of karma, of his karma. And then what happens to such a person who does not work for a particular goal or a particular selfish fruit? Janma bandha vinir muktaha. Mukta means he becomes free of janma bandha. Because this life itself is a bondage. And we'll talk about that. So, vinirmuktaha. Nirmuktaha means he nishchayatmika. Clearly, definitely, he becomes free. And vinirmukta means visheshena mukta. So he is completely and clearly free of this bondage of his birth. And then what happened to such people who go beyond this bondage of birth? Padam gacchanti. He said, okay, if I go beyond this bondage of this earth, then what do I get? Padam gacchanti. Gacchanti means they go where? To a higher state. Padam, higher state. Again, go does not mean that they leave this earth and go to heaven or go anywhere else. Here, living itself, they live in a higher realm of experience, of happiness, of joy, which you and I just crave for. These realized masters, these wise people live in this padam, this zone, this place of gacchanti. Where do they go? Anamayam. Amaya means sickness. Anamaya means no sickness, no illness, no sorrow. And you know, when we do the closing prayer, we say, Sarve bhavantu sukhina, sarve santu niramaya. May everybody be happy, may everybody be free from disease. So amaya means disease or sickness. So they go to a place where there is no illness, there is no sickness, there is no sorrow, no problems. So let us speak a little bit about this particular verse. So Manishi, I already talked about. These are the wise people who have not only studied the scriptures from their guru, but they have contemplated upon it and they have applied it. Then only I can be a Manishi. I may theoretically have read that our mind should be under my control, but if I am not able to do that, and if my mind is running my life, then such a person is not a wise person. So Manishi is one who controls her mind or his mind and gives up fruit. We talked about that quite a bit in the past 2 weeks, but just to cover it very briefly, see, action results in a fruit, in a particular result. Fruit is a result. Like you put your hand in fire, you know, your hand burns. Now that is a result. You put a mango tree, you get a mango. You put a bitter lemon, you get bitter lemon. You put a sour lemon, you get sour lemon. So whatever seed you plant, you get the result. Similarly, any action I do, if I work hard in my job, I get success. If I don't work hard, I fail. We even tell our students, if you work hard in the class, you'll get A. If you don't work hard, you will get C and D. So the result depends on the action. So that is very clear. But what this Karma Yoga says, that do not work with a particular action. A, it should not be a selfish result, number one. Number two, if I am working for a particular goal, a particular fruit, that this and this alone I should get, and when I don't get it, then I become miserable. So if I have a, but not that I should not have a goal, I should have a goal, but insistence that my result alone should work and nobody else's, it's like 8 people are running in the Olympics. Now we have the Winter Olympics going on. 8 people are competing in a race. All 8 are not going to get the gold medal. One will get gold, silver, bronze, and the other 5 won't. But at least they have the satisfaction that, look, we are in the top 8 in the world. We represented our country, we did our best. So if a person goes with that attitude that I did my best, but the other person who won the gold prepared a little better, but at least I did my best, I represented my country and I did it with honor, that is good. But if he says, if I win the gold, it is good, otherwise I'll commit suicide, or otherwise he gets depressed, then his idea is that I must only get gold. Yes, all 8 of them are competing for the gold, but only one can get. So the willingness to accept that, yes, in this particular race, I didn't do good. Maybe next time, next Olympics, I'll do better. Or my effort was not good. He deserved it. But keep on saying, oh, this was wrong and that was wrong, or blame the judges or blame the referees. And that's what people typically do. When they lose, they blame somebody else. They blame the referee, or they blame the opponent for cheating, or they blame God. So then you are working only for a particular fruit. But the idea is that I did my best, and leave the result to God. And if I didn't succeed, next time I'll work better. But if I only work with I and my, then the ego comes. Ego comes that I did so good. No, the Lord worked through me, and whatever results I dedicate to the Lord. So that attitude, so our life, instead of becoming egocentric, should become God-centric. See, the word egocentric is used, but it should become God-centric, where I should constantly remember the Lord and take the Lord with me and work as a servant of the Lord. The Lord is working through me. With that attitude, I should work. And the ego and the vasanas are our cause of birth. The scripture say that because I had unfulfilled vasanas, I had certain tendencies, that is the reason I appeared on this earth. Reason I took birth, because what they say that in the theory of reincarnation, the body gets cremated or buried. It's the mind and intellect, which is the individual, which is the jiva, the individuality. And based on my vasanas, based on my tendencies, and on my karmas, I get either heaven or hell. But after I have enjoyed or suffered, then I get a new body based on my vasanas. If I have unfulfilled desires, then and then alone birth happens. So a wise person, a realized master, somebody like Gurudev, Swami, Chinmayananda, or Shankaracharya, or Buddha, those people are no longer born again because they have dissolved all their vasanas. Well, the realized masters have become one with God, and for them there is no other birth. Or if they do come again, they will be sent for a specific purpose to spread God's word. Otherwise, they are not born out of desire. While you and I, we still have a lot of unfulfilled vasanas in this lifetime. And unless you can dissolve your vasanas, you will go through the cycle of birth and death, birth and death. So they say the goal of life should be to reduce personal desires, personal selfishness. And with the body, I should serve. With the mind, I should love. And with the intellect, I should know God. And with meditation is the fastest way to dissolve the vasanas. So as long as you have unfulfilled vasanas, and if you say, I must have this, I must, and if I die without it, then you will be born again to continue the journey. So the idea is that in this life itself, let me be finished, or at least let me progress so much spiritually that my life will be continued in the spiritual path. So birth is due to unfulfilled vasana. That's why he says a person who goes beyond selfishness, janam bandha vinir muktaha, even the cause of birth is not there in such an individual because he has no vasanas, and vinir mukta is totally free of birth. And padam gachanti anamayam, they will go to that. So we'll talk about it. But when we say accept all situations, samatvam yoga uchyate, it does not mean you become a doormat. See, people think that Bhagavan is advising us to become a doormat, whatever happens. No, it's not like that. He even told Arjuna that your duty is to resist evil. So if there is a selfish person who is, say, taking advantage of us or suppressing us, without hating or without anger, one should resist and tell this person, look, what you are doing is not right. And it's, softly, gently. Because if you submit and let the person keep on taking advantage and doing the wrong thing, it's bad for him and it's also bad for you. So that's what all these freedom fighters, Gandhiji and Subhash Chandra Bose and all of them taught us, that when there is something wrong going on, it is your duty to resist it non-violently with love. And adversity will come to everybody. Adversity comes to everybody. Problems come to everybody. But one who is firmly rooted in this knowledge, in this right understanding, that adversity cannot affect such a person. In fact, the more adversity comes, the stronger this person gets. That's what they say, that when God gives us problems, he is giving it for us to improve. So if you look at problems as an opportunity to improve, then you will learn from that. If you say, why do I get this problem? What have I done? Then you will just get, let the problem overcome you. So adversity should be an opportunity to grow, and only then you will be freed of the problem. Otherwise, the problems will keep on repeating. That's what they say. Like, if suppose in third grade, you didn't pass. Here, they don't do that. Here, they promote everybody. But in India, if you didn't pass third grade, you have to repeat it. Second year, third year. I remember there was one student of ours who'd never passed first MBBS. And he stayed in first MBBS for 7 or 8 years. He just, his father lived in Africa, used to keep sending him money. He never studied. And literally, he was in all his... classmates had become registrars and seniors, you know, and he was still in first MBBS. Why? Because he never used to study, and his father, I guess, was foolish enough to keep sending him money. So here also, the Lord will keep giving us these problems unless you learn. Once you learn from the problem, then you graduate. So let problems be your teacher. And then alone, you will be completely freed of all problems, and your mind will become peaceful when you have learned from the problem and evolved. So there are three kinds of illness. Amayam, he said, Bhagavan says he reaches the state padam gachanti anamayam, where there is no illness, there is no problems. So there are three kinds of illness that we suffer from. One is called vyadhi, adhi, and upadhi. So vyadhi is bodily illnesses. So when my body gets sick, when I have a fever, or when I have a cough, or when I get pneumonia, or when I get some, you know, bodily problems, so that is called vyadhi. So that, obviously, we go to the doctor and treat it, take care of it. So any physical problems come, I have to take the medicine, and whatever the medicine is prescribed, I take it, including all the precautions, what to eat and how to exercise and all that. So that is physical problems, vyadhi. Then adhi is mental, and that is the mental stress. When I'm stressed out, when I am so confused, and when I have so much difficulty. So how do I handle my mental stress? Not by taking drugs or drinking alcohol or taking Valium, but by right knowledge and by dedicating my activities to the Lord and surrender to the Lord and say, God, you alone are capable of taking care of this problem. So surrender to the Lord, working as his servant, developing love for God, developing a relationship of love, and constantly remembering the Lord is the way to reduce mental stress and strain. And so that is adhi. And the third is upadhi. Upadhi is intellectual illness. And what is intellectual illness? Confusion. When I'm confused, when I don't know what is my goal, then that is called upadhi. But upadhi also in Hindi means degrees. So the more degrees you have, the more problems you have. So the point is that in life, there will be either physical problems, emotional problems, or intellectual confusions. But a person becomes niramaya, goes beyond all of these, when such a person has worked, dedicated to the Lord, and reduced his or her vasanas, and giving up the fruit, does what is right, not what is good for me, not what is what I can get, but what is the right thing to do. There's a very beautiful story about Raman Maharishi. I'll tell you the story. So it said that Raman Maharishi, of course, was an evolved master who lived in the 20th century very recently, and he left his body, I think, in the 1950s or 60s. So one time somebody came to him and said, Bhagwan, they used to call him Bhagwan because the Lord himself was in him. So he said, can you teach me about Karma Yoga? So Raman Maharishi, as was his habit, spoke very little, very little. Most of the time, when he sat and people came with questions, just in his presence, the question would be answered. Raman Maharishi never had to speak. Just people would come, sit, have 100 questions, and by the time they leave, 1 hour later, the questions are answered. So he hardly spoke. His presence was so divine. So Raman Maharishi didn't speak. So he said, oh, he doesn't want to answer. 15 minutes, he just sat silent and the questioner sat silent. So, okay, let's go for a walk, Raman Maharishi says. He says, okay. So they go for a walk and they're climbing up this little hill outside the temple where Raman Maharishi used to live. And as they are climbing the hill, Raman Maharishi finds a long, very thick stick, like a branch, which had fallen off the tree. So he carries that with him. And this guy is walking, and so they go to the top of the hill. And Raman Maharishi sits down for a while. So he also sits down. Okay, it's time to rest. And Raman Maharishi had a knife, a pocket knife. So he takes out the knife and he's cleaning this branch. Totally, he's removing all the, you know, the covering. What do you call that?
Bark.
The bark. He's cleaning out the bark and shaping the wood perfectly, you know, and makes a beautiful walking stick. About 2-3 hours he works. And this person is watching, you know, Raman Maharishi. Perfect work he does, beautiful walking stick, cleaned the bark, made it the right shape, right size. 3 hours of work. And this person is just watching, you know, what is he doing? And then he's, Raman Maharishi is walking down using the stick, and this person is walking with him. And as they come to the bottom of the hill, there is this cowherd boy who's taking his cows up to graze. And Raman Maharishi says, you know, he takes the cows every day up and down the hill. And I find he has struggled to climb the hill. So he takes the stick and gives it to the boy and walks on. So the man says, this is Karma Yoga. He spent so many hours making it, but had absolutely no sense of possession. Somebody needs it more than me, he gives it. So that is the essence of these Mahatmas. They teach without even speaking. He didn't speak a single word, but taught him what is the true meaning of Karma Yoga. So that is what the essence of this verse is. And but then when he says, Padam Gacchanti Anamayam, they go to a higher state. But then the Upanishads tell us that Karma Yoga alone, karma alone does not yield the highest goal. That is true. Karma or Karma Yoga or even doing these rituals, these prayers, by prayers, I don't mean love for God, and that can take you to the highest when you surrender to the God. But doing, you know, rituals or just going mechanically to pray or doing a lot of service, you know, maybe serving the world and removing poverty and helping, you know, homeless. All those are very good, but that alone will not lead you to realization, self-realization. For self-realization, karma, love for God, and knowledge, all three are required. That's what they say, they are three. So, bhakti and jnana. So, when I have love for God and when I have knowledge, these are the two wings, and my body then works to serve the world. So, when he says karma yoga will take you to the highest goal, what Bhagavan is saying, and Swami Chinmayananda in his commentary says, that a person who does karma yoga, who serves the world, what happens is, such a person's own selfish desires become less. When my desires become less, my mind becomes peaceful. When I'm working for the Lord, then I have less agitation, less stress, and his vasanas get reduced. And when a person's mind is quiet, vasanas are reduced, and body is serving, then and then alone the right knowledge can penetrate. We may listen to the Bhagavad Gita, we may listen to all the Swamis and teachers who come, we may read the Upanishads, but unless I am serving and unless I am sharing and reducing my selfishness, making my mind quiet and reducing my vasanas, the knowledge will not stay. Example they give is a vessel. If it is dirty and has a lot of dirt and, you know, bad things, then you put milk in it, the milk gets ruined, it gets spoiled. To put milk, you need a clean, pure vessel, then only the milk will stay. So similarly, for this knowledge to stay, we have to purify our mind. That's why they, in spirituality, they say, just as in real estate, you know, they say, what is the secret of real estate? Location, location, location. So similarly, the secret of Vedanta is purify, purify, purify. So purify your mind, make it pure, make it dedicated to the Lord, reduce the selfishness, and then sit down at the feet of the Guru and learn the knowledge. So a lot of people think that from the internet I can study, you know, why do I need to go to classes? Even one time Neeru was telling one of the kids, oh, you should come to Bal Vihar. So why should I come to Bal Vihar? So she said, you will study about Ramayana. He said, Ramayana, I can Google it. Why do I need to go? So people think that with Google you can get everything. But there is a difference between Google or YouTube and a live teacher. And that's why we all, at least whatever little I know, is because of all these Mahatmas who have come, all the wonderful teachers, you know, Swami Tejomayananda and Ishwarananda. Of course, I had the good fortune of listening to Gurudev also. When I was a teenager, I did listen to him a lot, and my mother used to take me to his ashram. So you need a live teacher who can pass on this knowledge, because the knowledge is like this, you know, Guru Shishya Parampara. So the knowledge has come from the Lord to the Guru. And so that's why dedicating to the Guru and then alone, this knowledge. Of course, one can study in the internet. One can, if there are some good, there are beautiful talks by all great Mahatmas now. If you go on internet and YouTube, there are wonderful lectures by all Swamis, Tejomayananda and Ishwarananda, and even the Swamis of other missions, you know, Ramakrishna Mission and Brahma Kumaris. And also, there is nothing wrong with listening to them and getting the knowledge, but ultimately, having a live teacher is completely different. One has to have, unless you sit at the feet of a teacher and learn this knowledge will not go. So that's why whenever we have an opportunity, we have wonderful teachers who come here, Swamis and teachers. So take advantage of the opportunity and learn from them. If you have questions, you can ask. So karma yoga alone will not take us. Karma yoga has to be accompanied by knowledge. Now, why should we do service? Why should we do karma yoga? So they say that the world I have got is what our parents gave us, right? Our parents created this, didn't create this world, but improved it. You know, whatever they could do to make the world better and give us a good life. So they gave us education and they took care of the world, took care of nature. So similarly, it is my duty to make this world a better place so that my children may enjoy the world. Let me, you know, you can say, well, there is so much violence, there is so much killing, so much negativity on the internet, and let there be. But I should do my part to make this world a better place for my children. Let me, you know, not pollute the environment. Let me contribute as much as I can. Let me at least make my world where I live a better place so that my children, A, may enjoy a better world and learn from my example, because the children will see what you do. So if I am helping, if I am serving, then I become a role model for my children. So the idea is that whatever I am doing ultimately has an impact on future generations. So just as our parents left us this earth, did their best, so it is my duty to serve the world so that my children may enjoy clean air and clean water and, you know, global warming. And let me at least not contribute to all those things. Let me. And for that, a clear vision is very important. What is my vision? What is my goal? That's what Gurudev says. Enter life with a mission, with a vision. So once you are in this life, have a clear vision, have a clear goal of where I'm going, what am I doing, and use the scriptures. In another place, Bhagavan says, Tasmat Shastram Pramanam Te. Make the shastras your goal, your pramanam, your evidence, your guide, make shastras your guide and live your life living in the right direction. So the vision has to be very clear, and the vision, as we said, has to be God-centric, not ego-centric. So, and then in this life, am I here for bhoga or am I here for yoga? And so there are two possibilities. I could either become a bhogi, where I can just enjoy life, khao, piyo, maja karo, eat, drink, and be merry. It's okay, life is too short. Why am I worrying about or reading all these scriptures and all? You know, it's okay. After, when I get old, I might do it. Or it's all, this is bunk. You know, some 8,000 years ago, some rishi wrote this. Why am I wasting my time studying all this? Let's have fun. You know, enjoy life. No, the life is not meant for bhoga, but life is meant for yoga. Yoga does not only mean the physical exercise, but yoga is united with the Lord. So that is what they say, that one who is a wise person, who works without selfishness, then he goes beyond even birth. Then such a person no longer has to take birth. And that is, otherwise you go through life, punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam, punarapi janani, gathare shainam. Bhagavan Shankaracharya ji says in Bhaj Govindam, he says, how many lifetimes you are going to go through this birth and death, again enter a mother's womb and again take birth and again have diapers and learn ABCD and teachers beating you and mother slapping you. And why do you want to go through that again? You know, you have got this right knowledge, finish it here and now itself. So get rid of this bondage of again and again born. Or not only that, another thing we don't know, next life, I might be born a human, maybe not. I may be born as a mosquito or a buffalo or plant, who knows. So once you have this knowledge, janma bandha vinir mukta, go beyond this bondage of birth and padam gachanti anamayam, and go to this realm of non-sickness. Anamayam, no sickness, no physical vyadi, no mental adi, and no intellectual upadi, and beyond the realm of vasanas, becoming one with God. So that is the essence of these two verses. And here we finish the topic of Karma Yoga, and then we'll go on to other topics. Actually, after the next week, the 2 weeks from now, is the most beautiful part of this second chapter called Sthita Prajna. So Arjuna asks, what is the hallmark of a wise person? How can I distinguish, you know, a wise person? Does he have horns on his head? Or does he have a halo, light shining around him? Or does he walk on water? So that's the answer Bhagavan will give us. So the second chapter, these are the very beautiful verses. So any questions? Any comments?
So when we die, the mind and intellect goes with us.
Yes, it's the mind and intellect is us. This body is not me. See, the body, we all have the same human body. You know, male or female, there may be a difference. Somebody is short, somebody is tall. But the body is made of the same five elements and has the heart, lungs, spleen, kidney, you know, brain, all of us have. So the body is made of five elements that perishes. What distinguishes you from her or him is your emotions and ideas. See, your emotions are different from her emotions. Your ideas are different from her ideas. So the mind and intellect is called the jiva or the individual. The mind and intellect is the individuality and accompanied by the vasanas. So the body perishes, Om or the Lord with consciousness, nothing happens. But it's the mind and intellect that travels out of this body. They say, this person is dead. When they mean dead, what it means is the mind and intellect is no longer and living in this body. And from where does the mind and intellect get life? From consciousness, from the Lord. So the mind and intellect itself is inert, but it gets life from this consciousness. So when the person dies, drops his body, they say he gave up his body, right? So who is that he or she? It is the mind and intellect that is deciding this person, accompanied, propelled by the vasanas. So it is my desires which determine what kind of body I will get. So if I die with a desire to be a musician, and I couldn't be a musician, then my next life, I'll be born in the house of musicians. If I have this desire to spiritually grow and evolve, and I could not reach, then my next life, I'll be born in the house of yogis. That's what Bhagavan Krishna tells. So what travels is the mind and intellect, accompanied by the desires, vasanas, and then based on my good or bad karmas, I'll spend some time in heaven or hell. Actually, most of the karmas, you suffer right here itself, the good and bad. But whatever are left over, I may, you know, have some time. But then I continue my spiritual journey and pick up a new body until I realize the truth. So what travels is the mind and intellect, propelled by the vasanas.
If somebody is very smart, they're smart.
No, not necessarily. Spiritual, see, what stays with you is your spiritual progress. Suppose I'm a genius, you know, my IQ is 140 or 150. Next life, I still have to start with A, B, C, D, E and all that. But the spiritual progress will stay with you. So whatever good karmas you have done and whatever spiritual knowledge you have acquired, that stays. So your next life, that's why some people are, you know, realized masters at age 5. Yes, there are some exceptions, like Mozart, by age 5 he was composing, symphonies. And then Bobby Fischer was grandmaster at age 9. Those are exceptions. But the majority of people, the intellectual progress, you have to start from A, B, C, D. You know, some people may be a little smarter than others. And that has to do with genetics. That has to do with previous karmas. But what stays with you is your good and bad actions and your spiritual progress. So spiritually, where you have reached on this journey, that will stay with you. But ABCD, you will still have to learn. Even Einstein, after he left his body, if he takes another body, he has to study ABCD and 2 plus 2, 4. He won't be a mathematical genius, you know. That's a good question. Thank you. Yes.
How do you define God's work?
God's work?
Somebody said that you need to.
Yes.
Yoga, you need to.
Yeah, God's work.
Dissolve all your vasanas, and to dissolve the vasana, you should do the karma yoga. That's a God service. So how
right.
Do you define what kind of work?
I think God is, what is God? You know, what is God? God is not only Krishna or Buddha or Jesus or Shiva. Yes, those are all manifestations of God. Those are all forms of God. And they're all God himself appearing in different forms. Somebody loves Krishna, somebody loves Shiva, somebody loves Buddha, somebody loves Jesus. So they are all manifestations. But God is the totality, the substratum of this whole universe. God is the support of this entire universe, and that total entity, which we call as Brahman or the totality, takes different forms as Shiva, Krishna, Buddha to bless the world. But that same totality is there in every one of us. I'm speaking because God is in me. You are asking the question because, so God is there everywhere. So when I say I'm doing God's work, what I am doing is, A, I am expressing gratitude to God for giving me the ability to work, for giving me the ability to serve. And then when I'm serving the other individual, I see God in them. That's what Mahatma Gandhi said, you know, Hari, you see, that's why he called them Harijans, because God is in every one of us. So serving the world, Jan Seva is Narayan Seva. So when I'm serving the world as doing God's work and seeing God in everybody, then there is no ego. So that is number one. Number two, God's work is what leaves a good residue in my mind. They say it's not the action, it is the reaction. Sin is not in the action, it is the reaction. So if I do a particular action and it leaves a bad taste in my mouth, I shouldn't have done it, or it's not the right thing. I hurt somebody or I cheated somebody. Inside, I may be happy. Outside, I may be happy. But inside, I know that what I have done is wrong. So if it leaves a wrong taste in your mouth, then that is. But if it makes you happy that I have done something good, then that is you're doing God's work. So A, seeing God in everybody. B, serving the world as God's presence. And 3, the kind of reaction the action leaves, that determines whether it's God's work or it is the ego working. If it is selfish, then the action will leave a negative residue. But if it is unselfish, then that is God's work. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
It's a good question. Thank you. I had to think to answer that. Okay, just a reminder, Acharya, I was talking about Mahatmas, so Acharya Vimal Chaitanya Ji will be coming. He's a wonderful teacher and he comes from New Mexico. He's a vice president of the university, but also has studied with Swami Chinmayananda himself. And he will be here February 28th to March 3rd, and that's Wednesday to Saturday. He'll be here for 4 days. And he's talking on Prashnopanishad. It's a very, very, even though it's an Upanishad, it's a very, very practical. A lot of practical ideas are given how to live. And this Upanishad is 6 students asking 6 questions to the teacher. And it starts from creation to the highest, to what is God and what is God's work. It's all he explains. And so February 28th, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, he will be speaking. From 7 to 8:30 in the main hall, 7 to 8:30, and then Saturday will be in the morning, 9 to 10:30. So we have 4 lectures. So please attend. We do have the book in the office. If you don't have the book, you please buy it. And he has done, I think, the first 2 questions he has finished. So then he will continue that. So Prashna means question, Upanishad. So please attend that. It's a great opportunity to hear a good teacher. And then next Sunday, we will continue the 2nd chapter of the Bhagavad Gita about how to go beyond delusion, confusion, how to go beyond. And what happens to a person who goes beyond confusion, beyond moha. And I'll also tell you a very nice story about Swami Tejomayananda Ji, our head of the Guruji, head of the mission, how he entered Chinmaya Mission. It's a beautiful story I was going to tell today, but we are out of time, so we'll do it next week. So thank you. Hari Om. And we do have dinner, so please stay for dinner. And if you have not sponsored, it's a good opportunity. You can sign up in the office. We do have some openings for dinner, for lunch. I'm sorry, why am I saying that? Lunch, so it's lunch will be served, so please join us for lunch, and if you want to sponsor, go to the office. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukkha Bhag Bhavet. Shanti Shanti Shantihi, Harihi Om. Shri Gurubhyo Namah. Harihi Om.